That's out.
Oh, he's dropped it. I don't believe it. That's unbelievable. He was throwing it up. He thought he had it. It was a little lollipop. And the man who did so well with the bat has taken his eye off the ball, and the ball has just dribbled out of his fingers. He was about to throw it up.
Hey, great cricket.
The Great Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a great cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the Great Cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome back to the Great Cricketer Podcast. Game of Thrones is over, but the Great Cricketer Podcast is back, and that's because winter is coming. Let the horses run wild and free, boys. Anything could happen in the next hour or so with Dan Bredig on the podcast and Ed Cowan as well. My name is Ian Higgins, and I'm joined in studio by Dave Edwards and Sam Perry. Boys, welcome back. How have you autumned?
Well, we all look good, don't we, Higgos, because we've been away from cricket, and it is always healthy to be away from cricket. I mean, those
Skin's glowing, rigs are glistening.
Those who follow Higgos' Instagram specifically, and you should, will note just how good being away from cricket has been.
It's absolutely cutting season.
My fitness 7%
body fat. Didn't even think that was a thing.
Absolutely. Anyway, we all look good. We've all been doing different things, though we have come together occasionally because it is presentation season, so clubs have hired us to come and speak about the darkness of cricket because people sort of get off on that in some way, shape, or form. So it's been great to we've gone out to Perth. We were at Sutherland last week. We have Gordon Cricket Club tonight. So it's been good to see you there, but otherwise been fantastic to be away from cricket. I've been following rugby league in the last couple of months. Very different to cricket. You know, like a bit kind of like
it's very earnest code, isn't it?
Oh, it's soapy. Rugby league, you know, it's all about like grubs and
neighbours.
Thugs. Yeah, it is, and it's good in that sense. Yeah. It's less considered. It's neighbours.
Edo's people are already over the football season. You know, down under. A UK fan base will be excited for the upcoming. Well, it's their nadir moment, really. I mean, they're going to win the Ashes in the World Cup. Probably, we'll touch on that in a moment's time. But I want to know: have you enjoyed the time away from the game? Are you ready to get back into it to be heard again? Are you ready to be heard again?
Glad you asked, Higgos. I think I am. I mean, I'm on a podcast. I think I'm ready. I mean, it's the same every year, especially when we played, boys. You know, you'd get to the end of the year, you'd limp towards the end of the season.
Ooh, yeah.
You'd want to quit cricket as soon as you walked off that field. Then the next few months, you allowed yourself to kind of, you know, slowly get used to the idea of going around again. And then it becomes more and more exciting. And finally, when it's the cusp of first ball of the season, you're ready because you're suffering from cricket-related dementia, which we all suffer from.
And we saw this in action when we did perform at these events. Like, as soon as our presentation ended and everyone went for beers at the end of the night, you could actually see the conversations of people saying to others, "You're going to go around again next year, mate." And you know, and the absolute like glistening in the eyes of that person, because that's the greatest thing to be asked by somebody to play again next year.
Right.
Really, they're asking you because they're really short on numbers. And, you know, the economic crunch is going to hit hard, global headwinds, etc. So you actually just need players and commitment now. But really, just to be asked to play is probably the greatest compliment you can ever be given in cricket,
lads. Whilst I've been in between doing arms at the gym every day of the week, I was on Netflix the other day. Now, bear with me here. I was watching this. There's a documentary on there at the moment. I think it's called Behind the Curve. It's a flat earther documentary, right?
Right.
So there's a guy on there at the beginning who's a flat earther.
Clear me out here, lads.
Yeah,
I've got a bit.
Yeah, that's right.
It's going to go for 3 to 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Give me the space.
Cheers. He's got two mallets in his hand, right? Two mallets and a golf ball.
Right.
And he's juggling the golf ball left to right, left to right. And whilst he's doing that, he is reciting the 50 states of America in alphabetical order.
Okay.
And he's talking about how he's a flat earther whilst he's doing it at the same time. Later, I don't want to give away any spoilers here, but basically, like, there's a guy who is a flat earther who creates an experiment, and he proves to himself that the earth is, in fact, round, has curvature.
Right.
And he comes to this conclusion. He says, interesting. And, like, the And the so he's aware that he just realizes that the earth is round, but he doesn't announce that. And like what I'm saying is that great cricketers in general are flat earthers, and that they know it's about identity, this whole thing of flat earthers. Like this guy knows that he can't leave because he can't be accepted again by the real world.
These are my people. These flat earthers are my brethren.
Exactly, exactly. Also, did we say Steve Smith have a net?
We did see Steve Smith have a net, and I think we're going to get onto cricket-related matters in a second. Can I just canvas a thank you to all of our fans who got behind us in great numbers with the Australian Podcast Awards a few months ago.
That's true.
We put together an ad for it. We asked you to vote for us to validate us as people.
People did vote.
And we learnt in the process that we indeed finished sixth or seventh out of 450 podcasts when it came to that vote.
Seventh. So the top six went into the most popular podcasts in Australia.
We just missed out. Seventh out of 450 was something we're very proud of. What then happened after that with the podcast awards was that you went into finalists categories per category. So the sport and rec category had six finalists, and we thought, well, having finished seventh out of 450, we're probably a chance to make the top six within sport. Unfortunately, we didn't make the top six within the sport and rec category. It was
full credit to Cycling Central that took out the sport and recreation category at the APAs.
Absolutely.
One of those nominees, sorry to cut in, one of those nominees had released one podcast this year, just a little half-hour one.
Yep.
It was a good podcast, to be fair, to the half-hour release back in November last year.
But the APAs is the premier podcast industry awards in Australia, purely by the fact that there are no other industry awards celebrating podcasts.
True.
Are we like Jeff Buckley? We're only going to be celebrated posthumously?
I was thinking Greenspoon. We're Greenspoon. Right. I mean, never won an ARIA as a song called Champion. But I just wanted to say thank you to those who did vote for us to validate us. Ultimately, we weren't validated by the officials. Clearly, there's something wrong with us. And I actually wouldn't disagree. There is something wrong with us.
We're affiliated with the Batuta Advocate and not, you know, like News Corp. And that's probably
we're disrupting they made the finals, traditional media.
They did make the finals.
There's nothing wrong with us.
Anyway, we've got some other news because we're doing other stuff this winter.
Yeah.
We've got a couple of live shows coming up that's been released on our social media. You might have already seen that. We're doing a couple of shows pre-Ashes. We're going to Melbourne and we're going to Sydney, boys. We're going to be in Melbourne first up at the Corner Hotel on the 25th of July. That's 2019.
It's a Thursday night.
It's a Thursday night at the Corner Hotel, Pez. What could be better than that? Well, if you're in Sydney, here comes the big news. It's the Comedy Store on the 31st of July. That's a Wednesday night.
Great night to go out in Sydney.
And then sooner or later maybe there'll be some UK news. I don't know.
We're not able to confirm anything yet.
Able to confirm anything about the UK yet, but if you are a UK listener, stay tuned next week, potentially for some news. On these Australian live shows, though, this is going to be our take on what's going to come up with the Ashes because, frankly, we're talking about, like, this Ashes series and the World Cup for the Australian side is essentially, like, this is 1948 boat tour shit. Like, this is, they left last week, May 15 or whatever. The last test at the Oval, for those who play both forms, is September 12th. That's just on 4 months over in the UK. This is two or three players coming back from cheating, two of them our best players. The UK, or England, I should say, favourites to win both the World Cup and the Ashes. Great summers over there. Global warming means that their summers are actually perfect at the moment. So the feeling over there is fantastic. It's all building to either great success or glory for Australia or a huge catastrophe. We're going to be there on our live shows to provide some kind of take on it.
Are we going to be like the Australian cricket team and go to the UK via Gallipoli? Because obviously the Australian cricket team, in order to psych themselves up for 4 months in England, went to Gallipoli, which is where every Australian sporting team goes when they need a bit of inspiration.
Yes.
Are we going to Gallipoli, boys?
We need to bond. We need to bond. And I liken our situation of presenting a podcast to going to World War One to fight the Turks.
Why is it always Gallipoli in World War One? There's so many other wars that Allied forces and Australian soldiers were involved in. You know, I just got back from Thailand, Kanchanaburi. It's an area in rural Thailand. It's where the Thailand and Burma Railway was built by prisoners of wars under Japanese rule.
Yes.
That's still functioning today. It's a wonderful symbol of, you know, courage and determination and ingenuity under fire.
And Richard Flanagan's Narrow Road to the Deep North is actually an outstanding book covering a desperate tale of a man who was involved in journey. Right.
Qantas doesn't fly direct there, so I think that's why they have to go Northern Hemisphere.
But Australia did go to Gallipoli. There was a wonderful piece written by Dan Bredig about this, so we might ask him if and when he comes onto our show.
He's on the show.
Yeah. you know, I think the main thing with Gallipoli is making sure that they go over and sort of understand that cricket is not war. In contrast to Steve Waugh's team, who went over, and I think Steve Waugh just absolutely frothed.
Well, his name was Waugh
on the comparison. Anyway, the current crop went over and sort of recreated photos and wore some.
How symbolic was it? I mean, his name was Waugh.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry. I'd actually never thought of it that way. Did he call Mark Waugh Afghanistan, didn't they? The Forgotten War. Then that war kind of re-emerged again, so it became...
Yeah.
Anyway. Aren't there photos of that Australian team wearing their baggy greens to Gallipoli?
And...
there was a lot going on with Steve, wasn't there?
Yeah.
They wore them to Wimbledon under Steve Waugh. Yeah.
Steve Waugh...
Went to a day out at Wimbledon
Steve
wearing
Waugh
the
hamburger. Steve Waugh wore the baggy green and a slouch hat over the top. Could you get more Howard-era nationalism?
Yeah. Just a pastiche of Australiana. Just needs a Ken Doan painting somewhere.
Exactly. Let's talk about the cricket.
We should talk about the cricket. That's what people downloaded this for, not to hear about our take on the Australian Podcast Awards, necessarily.
Well, we're just talking about Mark Waugh. So let's lead into the current World Cup. You can't talk about a World Cup in England without talking about what happened in 1999. Yeah. And Fox Sports, our great friends at Fox Sports, said seriously, have been playing the Australia versus South Africa match. And we have been having a bit of a WhatsApp chat about alternative realities with that last fucking ball with Donald and Klusener, right? So my take is if Klusener hits that ball to mid-off, Mark Waugh comes in at pace going to pick it up. If Klusener and Donald commit to that single, all we're talking about is Mark Waugh missing all three fucking stumps with a no-look backhanded flick.
Yeah. Yeah.
And all of a sudden, that legacy of being an effortlessly graceful guy erodes immediately. Instead, Donald kind of struggles, South Africa chokes, Fleming picks up the all three missed stump shot from Mark Waugh from 3 metres away, rolls the ball to Gilchrist, and, you know, that's a different story. Lehman missed from one stump, you know, a couple of balls before that.
Yep.
He goes, I believe your phrase on the WhatsApp thread was
just like how kissed on the dick is that generation. It's like he went for it to get his team into a World Cup final, which they hadn't won yet because they lost the final in the previous one in against Sri Lanka. He goes, I'm going to win this game with a no look backhand flick, South Africa had fucked it up so much that Arnold Donald just forgot how to run, dropped his stick, and Damien Fleming rolls the ball at the slowest pace possible.
I know, but
and he's still out by 3/4 of a pitch.
Yeah.
Like Mark Waugh, like even with everything on the line, he just managed to be languid.
Yeah.
As fuck.
So languid.
Has this bloke ever felt anxiety in his life?
Yeah.
Good point. Good game, though.
Yeah, really good game.
Yeah.
really good game. But moving to the current World Cup.
It's
so,
a thing that's going to happen, yeah.
Right.
Shall we start with Australia or England?
Well, let's start with the Australian team first, and then we'll go into the eventual winners.
Right.
I mentioned it earlier, but like Steve Smith had a net. Yeah, it's good to see him back in the nets.
They did the Coley thing.
That was Cricket Australia trying to match Coley's amazing net, which, you know, some people are still completing themselves over. And Steve Smith is just doing all sorts of weird, like just crippling OCD things. Like there's a thing where like he's going like, ooh, ah.
Yeah.
And like it's just unusual. Like Stark's
can't
playing.
Do much about that one, my friend.
Yeah, that's what he said to Stark.
Something like that.
It was just like condescending. Like it was a champing.
Stark apparently has rediscovered his in-swinger, which completely changes the entire complexion of world cricket. Mm. But he was beating Smith all ends up.
Mm.
And despite doing so, Smith, and this is a great lesson to the kids out there, Smith was still, you know, and that's what says to me, he's got it. Smith, he's back.
He's got it.
He was still able to underarm the ball back to Stark and with the line, that was doing a bit too much, my friend. Or can't do much about that, my friend. The my friend is the polite champing.
Yeah.
You know, that's a Steve, it's the OCD champ. Like,
batting in the nets is a mixture of stakeholder management, making sure the bowlers feel happy. But also, you know, exerting your natural alphadom over them. So I think he got the balance pretty well on point.
What he's saying is that like, I could usually hit any ball that you bowl for four, but that ball was
that
too
particular one.
It didn't get me out, but I couldn't have hit that one for four that you bowled. But still,
it's a compliment dressed inside an alphaing.
Yes.
Australia has selected a side to win the 2007 World Cup. in that England have fashioned a World Cup where, you know, 320 to 350 will be par on small grounds. Australia have selected 4 out of 6 batsmen who strike at 85. Australia's ability to chase 350 should severely be in question. That said, isn't it great to see Warner back?
Oh, he's got that look in his eye, doesn't he?
Yeah.
They're talking about that look that he's got in his eye, which I'm a bit worried about, frankly.
I had a conversation with a few friends of mine and, you know, also about
negative gearing.
Negative gearing mostly.
Yeah, franking credits.
Thank God.
Sydney, yeah. And it was just like, I was convinced at the time that I don't think Warner would play again. Such was the hatred in the team of Warner. But it's just like, Pez, you were right. It was just like, he'll play. Yeah, he's back now.
Yeah.
Like, no other conversations.
19 testing. We just the need. You know, italicize that. The need is ferocious.
Nothing happens anymore. Like, politicians double down on things. Yeah. Scandal doesn't matter anymore. Nothing matters anymore.
Post-truth.
It's really impossible to get fired from anything these days.
That's true. So Warner's return can be put down to Trump.
Well, I think most things can be.
I would have thought so. Yeah, the Trump effect. I have some official news from Cricket Australia that I'd like to release on this podcast.
Please.
And this is a contentious issue, but many just podcast as this morning, it's not on the podcast awards. This morning, the England cricket side released their kit. It looks to be a 1992 throwback, a beautiful powder blue that essentially reminds most Twitter users that they're being 7 years old again, and it works phenomenally. Australia recently did the same thing with a canary Guernsey that's a bit of a 92 throwback in and of themselves. And there's been a lot of questions post that of, can we complement these kits with the canary lid that they deserve? In that, if it's a 92 throwback, they wore a canary lid, it looks good, it makes me feel like a child again. Now, this is a silly conversation, right? I understand that. But instead of talking about it on Twitter, I just thought, fuck it, I'm going to email Cricket Australia. I want an official comment on this.
Right.
So I emailed Cricket Australia this morning, and to their credit, they said that they would give me an official reply. Now, it was through the form of a phone call, but when I did email, I was quite explicit. And
just email Cricket Australia.
Yeah, just email Cricket Australia. That's what happens. Yep. And I got an email back straight away saying, I'll give you a call. I said, I'm just looking now. It says, sorry for the essay. However, there is further clamour for the old school canary helmet and hat in Australia's case and the powder blue helmet and hat in England's case. Both teams have confirmed they'll be employing the green and navy headwear respectively. Can I ask, what are the reasons for this? Is it a contract thing, a cost thing, a pure aesthetic call? Anyway, and then I explained how many people listen to this podcast and it would be in their interest to give me a reply. And they said...
And if you don't reply by 5 p.m, I'll say that Cricket Australia refused to comment.
Exactly. I got a call to their credit, and it was explained to me that there's just 5 different helmet manufacturers and it never came up in conversation.
Big 5.
So all that really says to us is that, firstly, players don't want to carry around 2 lids in their kit, which is fine, and secondly, that... Twitter users think they have power and they have absolutely none. And I think our election on the weekend proved that too.
I mean, I find it startling the fact that people tend to like to complete themselves over a new retro kit.
Yeah.
The fanfare that comes off the back of like a release of, the UK, England throwback jersey and another throwback jersey we've seen recently, including the Australian one-day kit. Do we really fucking care, or is this an indictment on fashion today?
Well, that's it, Edo, because I was saying to Pez before off air that I don't really, like, it's fine. Like, I'm not going to, lose my head over it. But, I don't know. Like, I liked England's kit when it was 1992. I liked Australia's kit when it was 1984 or whatever.
I liked the 80s and 90s. I like music from the 80s and 90s. Yeah, I just liked that era of things.
The people who are making these kits... have given up on making new things, new kits. Like, you make new memories and new kit. Yeah.
I think it's more like if you're going to elicit memories of 1992 and make people feel good over that or complete themselves over that, why would you not just finish it off? Like, just finish it off properly, the way that it's meant to be done. And this is what Cricket Australia said. They said, well, we'd do it if it was a retro jersey, but this isn't a retro jersey. It's like, well, sorry, it is.
Pez, let me put it to you that if they were selling retro lids, they would have done it. But they're selling retro shirts, and those shirts will sell. It's a commercial play.
Now, I did get another comment from Cricket Australia over at the front page of the Daily Telegraph today as well, where they've had to roll out all manner of people to deal with the question of volunteers. Now, for those who did pick up the Daily Telegraph today, a fantastic rag. Wonderful.
Really
rag.
Going places, that rag.
Really is, and it's not a cancer on our democracy at all, but...
Stewarded greatly by Rupert Murdoch.
Fantastically so. They would have seen the front page this morning, no doubt from the slow news files, saying that Cricket Australia had something on their website that disparaged volunteers in club cricket and a plan of how to get rid of volunteers. Now, I'm totally sensationalising that.
Deadwood.
But can we read a few elements of... of what was on the front page of the Daily Telegraph.
I would like you to.
Yeah.
Or someone to.
Oh, let me just dive into the camera roll. And I've got to go a few back here because I've been taking a lot of screenshots today. Yeah, I mean, the headline was cricket bosses call on clubs to boot long-serving volunteers who are past best before date. Mm-hmm. And so some of the bullet points here in terms of barriers to succession planning include a gatekeeper, one person holding all the knowledge in a system only they understand, believing they are irreplaceable, considering some staff and volunteers are irreplaceable, poor records, poor management, situations where seniors take all, hanging on too long, and finally, a fear of change.
So the last two, the Rotos, is just, that's great cricket. Hanging on too long and fear of change.
Mm. You're never going to be able to, out corporate that though, are you? I mean, fear of change is a phenomenon that will never, that it goes hand in hand with grade cricket.
Well, I think
once that leaves, the entire competition wouldn't exist.
The last line of the article stated that all other sports except for cricket said that volunteers are their lifeblood. But lifeblood it's not a tangible asset, is it? You don't see that, you know, as a line item on your FY budget, and therefore to Cricket Australia it means nothing.
So yeah. I received official comment on this too, and what Cricket Australia said was this was a very old policy written in 2016 that was kind of buried at the bottom of their website, that was dug out
by someone who has since left the organisation.
That it was aggressively written, that it shouldn't have been there. To which I replied, but it's true. So, I mean, I've certainly had that experience at club cricket where there are so many fantastic volunteers, but like we perform around Australia, right? Mm. And you can tell when you go to clubs, those that attract many volunteers to be part of it, they have, I guess, an ethos of like diversifying it, of being good people where others want to come along and play. Mm. And then you go to other clubs where like there's one person that you deal with. Mm. That person tends to be mocked mercilessly, but behind their back by the players. They're the kind of people that I think CA was
centralized
was
power structures.
About
here. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, there is something charming about aging club officials that offer absolutely no tangible value to clubs for decades on end.
Why do they get like half an hour to training early and then do the nets, and then they're there at the end to put the nets down, but not doing anything else in between? They're always wearing very tight shorts as well.
I reckon that CA is just like sick of getting alphaed by the BCCI, and they're like, who can we alpha? I mean, cricket is all about alphaing people volunteers below you. Well, who's below us? Clubs.
Do you want any money? No. Well, yeah, of course we want some money. Not going to get any. I like how as well they've written that about like it's a really old policy written in 2016.
Yeah.
We've been doing
different
this
time
since 2012.
Yeah, we are really old.
Okay, well, we'll speak on England another time perhaps, but upcoming next is Dan Burdick, then after that, Ed Cowan.
Look, to be honest, I don't try and take the piss too much, but the problem is you start to get a little bit bored, so I try and do the right thing by the competition, I must admit. When I go there, I try and play conventionally, but realistically, I'm thinking from ball one, I just want to park this fucking thing into the car park. But you don't want to come out of it and people say, look at that arsehole Hodgie, you know, so, yeah, what a prick. It's good fun.
Welcome back to the Grade Cricketer Podcast. As ever, we are privileged to be joined by the assistant editor of ESPN Crick Info, also author of Whitewash to Whitewash, Bucking the Trend, and lately Bradman and Packer. I'm of course talking about Dan Burdick. DB, g'day.
Good to be with you, choppers.
As ever, you presume a lot. Now, DB, I got a one-year-old kid. DB, you recently wrote a piece about Australia's trip to Gallipoli. We just spoke about it in, disrespectful terms, really, in keeping with our tone, but you wrote something a little bit more earnest about it. What did you find out about Australia's trip to Gallipoli and why they were even there?
Well, I think the thing that needs to be remembered most of all about this is that in 2001, when Steve Waugh took the Australian team there for what was both a briefer and much more public visit ahead of that year's Ashes series, Justin Langer was not a part of the Australian One Day team and therefore was not in the squad that actually made the trip. And so had always wanted to, one, go, and two, go there with an Australian team. So I think, as much as this is a collective experience for the Australian team going to the World Cup, it's also the closing of a circle for Langer.
Brady, we'll talk about the actual Australian team who is going to Gallipoli, also the World Cup. Josh Hazlewood has missed out somewhat controversially. I think he's only played maybe five or six white ball games in the last 18 months, hasn't played since November. Justin Langer said hasn't played enough white ball cricket, but he was the number one ODI bowler just 2 years ago. Are Australia going to struggle without him, or was it a fair decision not taking Josh to the World Cup?
I think the balance of the bowling attack without him will be intriguing because, of course, this is a breakup of the big three, inverted commas, who have really dominated Australian pace bowling for the last 4 or 5 years. So with that in mind, there's a little bit of shuffling to go about. But I think also there was probably half an eye on what had happened 4 years ago, which was that Josh Hazlewood had a big summer in 2014-15, including the World Cup of that summer, got to England for the 2015 Ashes with a lot of expectation that he'd be ideally suited to English conditions, and apart from the Lord's Test, really didn't have a very good series at all, to the point that he was left out of the team for the final test of the series at the Oval. So the fact that he's also coming off an injury, I think the preference there was to make sure he was absolutely right for the Ashes, because, as we say, on paper, he should be pretty well suited to bowling in England, and maybe if he's in better shape than he was 4 years ago.
Brady, how's the camp preparing? Obviously, Gallipoli aside, we're now kind of there and training and netting. Are you hearing any kind of whispers from the camp around injuries or form or possible batting lineups?
I think there's still a fair bit in terms of the batting lineup that still needs to be worked out. I'm intrigued by the sort of role, well, both the batting position and the kind of role that Steve Smith is going to end up playing, because he effectively has taken the place of Pete Hanscom, who had been performing the role of a kind of middle order utility player who bats around the other more, I suppose you'd say, hitting oriented players in the top six, and really was doing that job a lot better during the time he was in the side than Smith had been doing it before his ban. So the fact that Smith is got to be fitted in there somewhere and to play that role is something that that's pretty important. David Warner, of course, is back, and I guess the other question is whether he breaks up the Finch and Khawaja opening partnership or also slots somewhere else into the order. So those are a couple of the questions. They've got a few warm-up matches now. They've got one against the West Indies, one against England as well, and one against Sri Lanka, I think it is, all before their first game against Afghanistan. And one thing that was clear from their camp in Brisbane, where they played games against New Zealand, was this team was a fair way short of match practice. So those three games are pretty important.
Dan, before we let you go, a lot of us Luddites will have been reading about some kind of technical issue with the BCCI and Australia's cricket scheduling, and the upshot of it all is that our national team will no longer, or for a period of our summer, not be here. I mean, this is just an absolute travesty that we don't get to play cricket exactly when we want to and on our terms, right?
On Australia Day in our country.
Mm.
We've got to play in India.
Oh, look, you're gonna get an avalanche of Big Bash League games on Australia Day. That'll be the trade off. But yeah, it's absolutely the end result of relationship between Cricket Australia and the BCCI not being exactly where it needs to be all of the time, and a lot of meetings that have taken place, not just between those two boards, but all the other boards in working out the new future tours program for the cycle from 2019 to 2023. And basically what happened was the last meeting in February, Cricket Australia and the BCCI came out of that meeting with differing opinions on what had been agreed, that Cricket Australia thought they'd agreed to be touring India for that one-day series in late January. Ironically enough, they would have been playing on Australia Day, but playing in India, given that it's India's Republic Day for that series. But the BCCI thought it was earlier in January, and being the financial power that the BCCI is, that view has ultimately held sway.
Bredig, unrivaled detail, thoroughly explained as ever. Thank you for joining us on the Grey Cricketer podcast. No doubt we'll catch you throughout our World Cup series if you have any interest in talking to us ever again.
No problems at all, Chopsman.
Kat actually wrote a three-part fan fiction series a few years ago entitled The Choke, which looked at the fallout from the dressing room altercation between yourself and Michael Clark. Now, clearly this incident split the team into two lines, you know, much like Christos Tsiolkos's novel The Slap. Can I send that to you for feedback? Because I think you'll like it.
I think you've just got good feedback, haven't you?
Fan fiction. Well, in keeping with tradition, ladies and gentlemen, we have secured the services for, I believe, the 10th time, according to Wikipedia, of Australian Test cap number 427, Ed Cowan. Ed, welcome back to the Grade Cricketer.
Sam, how are you doing? Thanks for having me on the show. Absolute privilege as always.
Lovely. That's just mutual, mutual privilege and feeling all around. Ed, can I kick off by asking, I mean, Australia...
Can I ask you a question?
No, please. Just let us ask questions first, and then you can do what you need to do. But, Ed, Australia's got 4 months ahead of them in the UK. It's like an Ashes boat to 1948 boat tour, and, you know, they've got a lot of barracking headed towards them. I mean, you've spent time over there. It can get pretty brutal, can't it? You know, does this current Australian team have the mettle, you know, to deal with 4 months of what the UK is going to throw at them?
Sam, we even had a technical glitch on Sunday where we recorded a show and it didn't work. I'm sure you've already alluded to that. And I gave you crap for asking this question, and yet you've come back to it. It's such a nothing question. Are the Aussies going to be handle the UK crowd banter of all the things you want to talk about? You've gone back here.
What happened on Sunday? There was no conversation on Sunday.
Yes, I've gone back here. What is your answer?
I think they'll be fine. Yeah, I think that's the least of their worries. The batsman facing the Duke's ball, Josh Butler hitting them out of the park, but they'll be worried about the 130-kilo pasty white male with a beer in his hand. That's for sure.
Okay, thank you for that answer.
You don't think there's any consideration given to that pasty white male with a beer in his hand when they're out in the middle? I mean, you've spoken before on our podcast about how you can how it's very difficult to hear people from the stands, but it's when you're walking through the tunnel on the way back in, when you're walking around the streets, in and out of hotels, there's this hostility whenever Australia tours England. That's just going to be magnified by 1,000. You sure they're going to be all right? I'm pressing you on this.
I think they'll be fine. I know you're doubling down here, Dave. Double down, Dave, they should call you. I think that the joy of England is that it's not hostile. It's part of the DNA of cricket over there is a little bit of lighthearted, what you might call banter, as opposed to, you know, what we saw in South Africa where people leaning over fences with batsmen coming off and pointing fingers and picking fights. It's just not that... not that aggressive. I think, you know, Australian crowds are just maybe even worse sometimes to their own team if you're fielding on the fence. So I think, yeah, there's going to be bigger factors at play. But hey, what would I know? As I said the other night when we re-recorded, well, pre-recorded, my experience of Test cricket is limited to a golden duck and mixing drinks for 4 tests. So I'm not that convinced that I know much about playing Test cricket.
Ted, not friend of the show, but one of your very good friends, Kevin Peterson, tweeted the other day saying that he was sort of comparing this England team to the great, you know, sort of modern-day Australian ODI team, where he said, you know, if Hayden didn't get you, Gilchrist would. If Gilchrist didn't, then Ricky Ponting would. You know, is KP right to compare this current England crop to that sort of great team of yesteryear for Australia?
That's a good question. I don't think just yet. I think they're going to come in as favourites. There's no doubt they play a super aggressive brand of cricket. They're playing fearless cricket. but they haven't won anything. And so to compare them to a team that won three straight World Cups, essentially, seems a little bit far-fetched, but they're going to come in as favourites. They're going to be very hard to beat. But I guess the one chink in their armour is it feels like they've only sort of got one gear, and that's fifth gear. And if you know, any team that comes across them on a day and in elimination cricket, they have a bad day. I don't know if they've quite yet nailed the win in all situations kind of box. So they'll be tough to beat.
Let's talk about Australia's short form prospects, Ed. I mean, where do you pitch them? They certainly don't seem to have picked a side that is, you know, as prone to being fifth gear at all times the way England have. There's a bunch of guys who kind of strike at around 85 to 90. You know, do you think they have a side to go all the way, or is, should Australia's expectations be more along the lines of it'd be great to make the final, and if we do, you know, if we get there, then we might be able to do some damage?
Yeah, I think they'd be sort of eyeing off that semi-final place, knowing that if you get down to the last four in a World Cup, anything's kind of possible. It's a 50-50 proposition. I think the trick will be getting to that stage. We've seen a team horrifically out of form and then all of a sudden race back into form pretty quickly in the last sort of 3 months. But that momentum may well have been sort of stopped with not much cricket in the immediate sort of short-term past. They've obviously a little bit of personnel changeover with Warner and Smith back in. I think if Australia are going to win it, they're going to need Dave Warner to probably be player of the tournament, or Pat Cummins to be a player of the tournament, or Mitch Stark to stand up. They're going to look to their big players to win the big matches. You know, if you'd asked 6 months ago whether they could win the World Cup, I think everyone would have said no. My gut feel is they're a chance, but they're probably not as much a chance as an England or an India.
To shorten the prism, if we will, Ed, just on your own career, are you going around next year? I know you only live within a couple of kilometres from the oval that you play grade cricket at, but are you going to be playing grade cricket next season?
I don't know. But I'd like to think so. It was fun to make a season of my life in terms of the fun-o-meter. It was a good excuse to go to the pub and have a sit on with the Sydney Uni boys on a Saturday. Don't know. I think it depends how my golf's going, probably, come the summer.
It might just be a case of kind of lessening that radius of grounds that you play at. I mean, isn't it currently it's sort of if it's past 3 kilometres beyond your house, you don't play? Maybe it's if you bring it back to 2Ks or something like that.
Literally living myself at Trumper Park, third grade for Eastern Suburbs. That'd be
beautiful.
Not a bad idea.
I'd travel a little bit.
That's right, Reg Bartlett.
Just saying grade words now from Sydney grade cricket. Ed, as ever, it's a pleasure to be joined by you. Thank you for giving your time in relation to the tech difficulties that you raised. We have no comment to make other than put two and two together. The podcast has been released 3 days after we said it would be. Thanks for joining us twice for what I think is maybe your 10th appearance, but also your 3rd ghost cast. That is, so you probably appeared 13 times.
The disappointing aspect was it was quite funny the other night. I feel like this has just been, you know, that straight vanilla kind of dread with, you know, a radio station in the middle of nowhere.
I haven't smiled once.
But hey.
Do you think we should share responsibility for that, or is that just purely on us?
Yeah, I think the quality of questions is obviously diminishing. You're running out of things to ask.
Cool. Yeah. Never take responsibility.
Okay.
Well, exactly. It's good to do public two-way feedback.
That you guys need some elite honesty.
Yeah, that's right. No, it's a bit of elite honesty. It's starting to get
we stopped recording
now.
2 minutes ago, by the way.
We didn't, though. Ed, thank you.
Later, dudes.
Dave, here goes. It wouldn't be a great cricketer podcast without some mention of our great friends. It almost goes hand in hand with the show now. Budgie Smuggler.
We're just talking about our friends, not the actual brand, just the friends at Budgie Smuggler, who we're friends with.
Exactly.
My hand will often go into a budgie.
Finish that sentence.
Oh, I did.
Okay. Budgie Smuggler is still going strong, ladies and gentlemen. No doubt, zero influence from us.
Unbelievable FY19 reporting.
That's right.
Strong EBITDA.
Happy wedding to its CEO, Adam Linforth. Married the wonderful Liz in a ceremony where Stephen O'Keefe spoke.
Oh, congrats.
It's all a little bubble.
My former housemate, we're still friends, what was at that wedding as well. They actually had a game of 11-a-side cricket. My housemate is also a left-arm finger spinner on the same team as Steve O'Keefe, which he was slightly upset about because he wanted to face Sock and ask him a few questions. But
it's like how you always want to face yourself. I always wondered what I would be like to face. Yeah.
I would have loved to have faced myself as a non-bowler.
They actually say that's a test of narcissism, that.
Yeah.
If you want.
That's what they say.
Yeah.
It's an indicator of psychopathy.
Who would you most like to face? Oh, myself.
Carl Hooper for mine.
But Budgie Smugglers, though.
Oh, yeah.
They're still going strong, strong in the UK, strong in Australia. There's no particular angle on this week's promotion of their product other than you can buy them. There are many. I enjoyed wearing the Australia Retro Budgie Smugglers post my back injury, which we haven't spoken about and we won't speak about. But I can swim again and it's nice to feel like I'm in this Southern Cross 1995 kit. Budgiesmuggler.com.au, B-U-D-G-Y, smuggler.com.au.
Cricket for results. I don't come to take wickets, score runs, or win games. I play cricket to look good. Rigs, chests, pipes, circuits, salads. This is my domain. So when I hit the sheds, I need to radiate success. That's why I use Chop King Cologne by TGC. With a blend of the finest handcrafted English willow and Kookaburra Red King leather, Chop King Cologne lets me radiate cricket. Whatever the ground, whatever the circuit. Chop King Cologne. The new fragrance for men by TGC. Reek of runs without hitting them.
It's that time of not only the week, not only the day, but the season, my friends. Hashtag ask TGC, where we answer your self-indulgent questions come short story competition. Thomas Harris kicks off this series, and he asks, he starts with looking forward to it, gents. My question, is there a place for a yuck 30 at the top of the order, see Colin Munro, if it contributes towards winning games of cricket, or is it more important to look good, see James Vince?
Thanks for the question, Thomas. Look, there's always a place for a yuck 30-odd in cricket. It's part of the rich tapestry, the fabric, if you will, of cricket. Somebody needs to be yuck. This is how we kind of establish hierarchies. Cricket is a race for hierarchy, if not anything else. However, is it more important to look good? Do you need to ask that question? Of course it's more important to look good. It's more important to look good in cricket and life than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason why people find Keith Miller more attractive and popular than Don Bradman. He looked good. There's a reason we put that towards a potential sponsor that we will not name now, who also was about looking good.
I'd love to see like a yuck Bradman 30, like in the archives, because you only ever see him just smoking fours through the covers. I'd love to just see like a 30 off 58 on an uncovered wicket just fucking struggling. Where's that footage?
It's been
wiped. That is where that footage is. It's been wiped.
He had his bat very much in front of his body when he was going back and across in defence, Bradman.
It was a bit yuck, wasn't it?
Very handsy. Anyway, it's more important to look good like James Vince.
Yep.
Okay, this one comes from Nordberg, handle JoeDeVola76, says, can grade cricket be summed up by the fact that any time an international player goes back to play, there's always media there as if the player is doing charity work or curing cancer?
I don't know if you could sum it up like that.
Yeah. And it's not a the neat way, summary.
It's neat.
It's like your auntie comes to you. What's great cricket? How'd you sum it up?
What have you been up to? Well, I'll sum it up for you in a few sentences, briefly.
Yeah, you know how those cameramen, when David Warner's playing grade cricket and it looks like he's curing cancer, that's what it is.
Yeah. I mean, my thing about like just taking it back to Bradman, just hearing like blokes in their 60s talk about, you know, it's like, oh, I watched Sir Don play down at some local ground in 1937.
And there was 20,000 people there.
There just fucking weren't. There just weren't that many people. Yeah.
Well, there was only 30,000 people in Australia at that time.
Okay, next question is from Yep You Bet, at Yep You Bet. Yep. Given the decline of 50-over cricket, some of the best World Cup moments have been when top teams get knocked off in pool games by lesser teams, e.g. Ireland versus Pakistan, 07, Vale Woolmer, Ireland versus England, 11. Should we be letting in more yuck teams to increase the chances of this happening, World Cup be more grade?
Well, I mean, we've just seen this with the election on the weekend, the proliferation of small parties leading to a difficult situation for the majors. I guess what does that mean? I mean, it's not a click. I mean, the coalition's only just established a click up majority, but you know, the proliferation of small parties, is that good for democracy?
Well,
is it good for the World Cup to have some shit teams in there?
It's just
to spice things up.
It's the trend. It's the global trend for democracy. Single issue parties, smaller parties are starting to fracture the two party preferred system. And in many ways, that's why Ireland and Bermuda, etc.,
single-issue parties
should be in the World Cup. Well, occasionally a single-issue party can wreak great havoc or make great inroads into democracy, you know, and make some issues really come to the fore. If you just have two-party preferred the whole time, you get the Coles and Woolworths effect, and I think that's what we might risk with the World Cup. Just duopolies.
Contrary view for mine would be that I love the idea of having as many yuck teams in there as possible, maybe even like a competitive second grade team, you know, from Western Australia, for instance, maybe. You know, a friend of mine plays with Papua New Guinea. I've never seen any one of his games, and I don't care to watch any of his games. You know, there could be 15 associate nations in the team.
Those Port Moresby decks are fucking shit.
And I've always said that.
Now that we agree, there should be more yuck teams.
But yeah, no, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying the amount of like upsets that have been like cricket. Like cricket's a sport where the favourite wins. The favourite always wins in cricket. There's never been an upset in cricket ever. And the ones that have a go, to go against my point.
The ones that have a go will get a go.
Like Bermuda, for instance, were in the World Cup, and Dwayne Levrock takes the catch. They lost single that issue. Game by 750 runs.
Yeah. That's right. But you remember the single issue of his catch.
Yeah, that's true. I do remember the single issue.
Anyway, if you have a go, you'll get a go.
Yeah. How good is Australia?
Okay. Maurice Lester writes in. He says, is Bill Shorten to politics what Herschel Gibbs is to the World Cup?
As in, yeah, you dropped it. You dropped the undroppable catch.
But did Shorten,
you literally had the catch.
Did Shorten ever have it? I mean, Herschel Gibbs had that catch, but did Shorten ever have the catch?
Well, there are certainly many journalists and influencers out there who were very wise, it turns out.
In retrospect.
In retrospect to what was going on with the election. They didn't mention it at the time.
No.
But afterwards, they were very happy to point out that the Liberal Party...
If you actually look at the Google searches on the day of the election...
Indeed, yeah, and the LNP were speaking to the deepest, I want to say fears, but
anxieties.
I won't. No, just to the deepest base levels of the Australians. They know the Australians better.
They know that we're base individuals, and we are.
He lost the election when there was footage of him running, surely, across that bridge. Like, that's when he lost it.
I've got to say... I have to say this because you really should not judge people on their coordination, but...
Well, we do.
By crikey, that running gait. And, you know, look, I'm as...
He's quite... the gait, he's quite leaning back, isn't he?
Well, the thing about Bill Shorten's gait is actually watched him run with Jonathan Thurston, for example, it wasn't too bad. But there's that one piece of footage of him running... at the MCG where, for whatever, I don't know if a staffer told him to do this, but somehow told him to push into a sprint in what was clearly the last 100 metres of the 5K run that he did. Mm. And by Jove, the lean back, the pumping hands. Yeah.
That was when he lost Queensland.
Complete, like...
that was when Queensland went, nah, this is not our leader.
It's a no from me.
Give me ScoMo for life.
Well, when you're running next to Jonathan Thurston and Queensland still won't vote for you.
Proximity to a Queensland legend won't win you votes, Bill. Okay.
And Bill, please stop canvassing for the next Labor leader, please. It's done. Just show some respect. You need to be...
I think I'm up. Next one is from Maddie Bland. Morning, TGC gentlemen. I come seeking some guidance and wisdom. With the recent federal election resulting in a shock victory for ScoMo and the coalition.
Was it?
Was it a shock? I fear the rift between my father and I has hit new unreparable lows. As a historical Liberal voting boomer, he was won over by the successful scare campaign and Murdoch spin that ensured the tax man was a far greater threat than climate change or any other loony communistic lefty policies.
Correct.
So I think I'm at a crossroads knowing I'm one of these socialist snowflakes. Again, his words. Do I try and rebuild our relationship through a bed of lies, or was it already broken beyond repair by the fact I've failed to reach triple figures after 13 years of dedicated application to the game of cricket, with the simple reason for such failings resulting from a genuine lack of ability? Probably could have been a bit neater with that sentence.
Hey, sounds like one of those spoken by the Liberal Party.
I'd love to know where I stand and how I should go forth. These are truly dark times for all socially progressive, untalented cricketing sons and daughters. Hashtag ask TGC. Yeah.
Well, as ever, the first answer is a quick cricket. I know that he's done 13 years. He's done 13 years time, cold hard time. That's not enough for mine.
Get less for murder.
Jesus Christ. It's a minimal 13 times. I mean, some people are given 30 years to the game, you know, from I was going to say birth, but perhaps even inception.
Conception.
Inception.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. With the dreams. Look, in specific answer to the question, try and rebuild your relationship through a bed of lies. Boomers love lies, as the election showed.
And franking credits.
They love putting their head in the sand, literally just like putting their head in the ground and putting the sand
like
over
an ostrich.
It.
So
right, we're part of this generational warfare. Don't apologise. Don't resile from that obligation. And
our core demo's 18 to 35s.
But was the relationship already beyond repair? Yes, it was. But still try and rebuild it through a bed of lies. You never know. You never know if Dad will come back one day.
He won't, though.
Jack Flynn French. G'day, guys. I appreciate this is a long one, but I reckon this is a good bit of hashtag AskTGC.
Good bit of hashtag AskTGC. Sure.
Towards the end of last season, I went through a breakup with my long-term missus. Handling it in the most grotesquely masculine way possible, I decided to get blind every Friday and Saturday night. Coupled with this, I had just gone my fifth straight innings without even reaching double figures with the stick. Then one fateful Friday night in February, I managed to cull one from the herd at the local nightclub.
Nice turn of phrase.
Yeah. I turned up to the match the next day, very dry in the mouth, but also feeling very proud as I raised the hand in the pre-game game groin stretches to a polite round of applause, acknowledging my night's efforts. Anyway, we're having a bat and we're 5 for 30. Blokes are spooning the nude nut off spinner to cover for fun. Next thing, we're 9 for 80 odd. Basically fucked because I couldn't hit water if I fell off a boat the last 6 weeks. And number 11 bats like the top tabletop cricketer. Anyway, we start knocking them around and we're 9 for 150 or so at tee. Righto. I'm 80 odd. Okay. And I began to question, if I was to knock around another 20 or so runs, have I completed the infamous triple C? Even though the circuit and shop came the night before. Anyway, rattled from this deep complex, I chipped it back to the bowler for 82 in a typical weak dismissal that Dad sarcastically assumed correctly on my return to the club rooms later that evening. If it adds any more context, I also managed to jag one on the Saturday night. So I was basically 18 runs short of being considered a god amongst my peers. Let me know your thoughts, gentlemen. I have a different view on this from the last time I read this.
Right. Well, my view does not waver in the sense that chronology and linear...
I agree with that.
...sequences are important when it comes to the triple C. You must hit the century on the Saturday, or maybe it's the Sunday, then go out on the circuit with your cricket friends and then have sex with a woman or whatever you like that night, all within, let's say, the space of 12 to 14 hours.
I completely agree with that theory. I think that the century must precede the circuit, and I think the chop must be a result of the century and the circuit.
It's all connected.
If I get a chop from my wife or something the night before that hasn't had any century context to it, I'm not therefore subsequently eligible for the century circuit chop. The thing I wanted to say, though, at the start of this podcast series, he goes, is... we're going to be on the lookout from now on for Ask TGCs that are clearly attempts from people to publicly have discussed their great feats. I don't really like it. You know, I want to feel some kind of self-deprecation. I want to feel some kind of anxiety. There needs to be some darkness to the psyche. If it's a pure question of how good am I because I had sex, I scored 100 and I went on a circuit. There's not that much entertainment value there for me.
Well, that's how I was first introduced into the great cricketer, so I take offence to that. I have a contrary view to both of your thoughts on the chronology of the Triple C, because I think I'm not sold. I'm not sold that it exclusively needs to be the night after the chop. I mean, the chop doesn't need to be after the 100. Because I think you can have a better time in your life if you have the circuit on the Friday and then meet a woman Friday night. And then that makes the century harder for a start and also just more satisfying.
I think that the whole, if you have to take the Triple C in a complete context of a day's play, so you wake up in the morning, nothing has happened, it's a clean slate, you arrive at the ground, no context, your day is completely before you, how will you perform? Well, you go and you hit 100, wow, that I feel really good now, I'm going to have a few drinks, now I'm going to go on a circuit, maybe to a bar, maybe to a couple of bars with my friends, my cricket fans, I'm feeling unbelievable at this point, I've scored 100, I'm riding that high, I'm therefore emboldened, I'm more confident than I would normally be in social situations. Then I finally start speaking to a woman. She likes me. I mention my 100. It's all within this context, he goes. You can't ignore the context of the 100.
Yeah, it's a good point.
The century contextualizes the circuit, and the circuit contextualizes the chop. And it does not work in any other way, in my humble view.
That is quite a sentence.
Just the way that you dead-eyed me during that. Fucking Tony Abbott on 2GB.
Well, I hope that clears something up, Jack, and your sex addiction.
Write in again.
Felix Lean writes in. He says, hey, TGC, I've got an Ask TGC that doesn't revolve around daddy issues and the glorious Triple C. Rather, I just simply need some help for the upcoming World Cup. A few mates and I are going to the World Cup match between Australia and the West Indies. However, due to the whole Sandpapergate, village name even now, saga, I feel as though us Australians can be easily targeted. I was wondering if there was any pre-prepared sledges or sayings we could use so that the Pommy pricks can fucking do one. Trying to hide the fact that I'm Australian is not possible, as I can't talk without my Australian accent. I also plan on wearing some Australian kit, so they'll probably give it away too. Cheers, boys. That comes from Felix.
Felix, Felix, Felix. Just listen up for a second. If you think that you can go over to the UK as a proud Aussie...
wearing Australian kit.
...with pre-prepared sledges, you are on course for a disaster worse than Gallipoli. Which... I recognise immediately is inappropriate and I withdraw the remark, Mr. Speaker. However, you will be walking into a barrage. That is what people in the UK are expecting. As with the entire Australian side, do not try and out-verbal English people. They are better at language than us.
They invented it.
In the main. And... the only way Australia will survive as a team and will survive as individuals is to own the joke. Own the joke, be part of it, accept it. Pre-prepared sledges are going to land you in hot water. You'll feel terrible and destroyed.
I think anyone from the UK who is going into a ground using a sandpaper sledge is just a fucking embarrassment as well.
Well, that's true.
I think if you just be like, just shrug your shoulders at a sandpaper sledge, which you will inevitably cop, it makes the person trying to say the sandpaper joke look like an absolute knob.
But so, you know that it's outside all the grounds, it's going to be like, it's going to be like, oh, buy your sandpaper.
Yeah. Oh, where's your sandpaper?
Good 100, Warner, but where's your sandpaper?
Bloke's just sandpapering imaginary objects while he walks off the ground.
That's quite funny. That's the whole crowd doing a sandpaper movement. I'll pay that.
Yeah.
But Barmy Army chants about, oh, jeez.
Just lager lout. I'm a lager lout.
Ben Stokes legitimately almost killed a bloke.
Anyway, we got UK news next. We got UK news next week. Just stay with us if you're
stick
from
around.
UK,
yeah,
please
yeah.
stick around.
Yep.
Last one, I think, boys.
It's from Jake.
Jake Proven. Yeah. G'day, fellas. Got a couple of English-related questions to ask. Question one. I've averaged under 20 in grade cricket my whole life. I spent one season in England, averaged a tick over 40. Can I merge my play cricket and my cricket stats together? In keeping with the English theme here, I have another question/story. Okay. My home ground in England was on the border of Gloucestershire and Herefordshire and had a creek running alongside the ground. They had put up a 30-foot net to prevent balls exiting the area, but alas, I cleared it on multiple occasions. Okay. I sometimes did this to get off the all right, mate. Other times after 100. Oh, yep, okay. Get it? You can hit the ball. The cow corner boundary was 50 metres on a bad day, which meant many hungover stumbling singles were hit to the bloke on the fence. On the other hand, the straight boundary was a bit longer compared to the cow corner fences. Fuck me, geography. But the sight screens look larger because of the small ground. My question is this, what is more alpha, banging a six into the sight screen and having the ball ricochet back to the 30-yard circle, or hitting a six into a different county? Love your work, Rooters.
Three things here. First off, nothing worse than getting off the mark with a massive six, is there? I mean, really spare me. Secondly, what I wouldn't give to be able to merge my own play cricket stats with my cricket.
I can't believe they're not interoperable.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's an Apple. It's like Apple.
It should be.
Apple, you know, you can't use a non-Apple product. Well, it's very difficult to use a non-Apple product with an Apple product.
We should be looking to start an aggregator service for all of these statistical platforms, working with the ECB and CA.
An agnostic platform that accepts all data forms, different data, maybe an API, a RESTful API perhaps.
It would help. It would help UK clubs specifically, because if someone says to them, you know, yeah, I play some first team cricket back home, you know, bat and bowl.
Good point.
You know, you can't search on Play Cricket because it's online. You know,
and the other, I mean, it's the only lie that remains in the game. Can you go overseas?
Yeah. Other than that, and did it carry? Yes, it always carried.
And did you have a third thing there?
The third thing was that clearly hitting the sight screen is way better, and it goes back to the bowler to the 30 yards. So that's way better.
Yes, so this is another one of these questions. It's like, hey guys, look, I've just got a couple of problems. So I'm not sure whether to hit a six into another county. Hit the sight screen. I have a straight answer to that. Of course, it's hitting the sight screen on the full and hearing the crash of the ball against the sight screen. As you said off air, Dave, it's like
hitting the crossbar the inhaling of the crowd as that happens, and the complete wonderment. Like, what is going on? We're bewildered. We don't know where the ball is.
However, also, can I just say, kind of quirkily mentioning that I've hit a six into another county, also by like opposition, proves that you know something about geography, therefore you've read a book, therefore you'll be ostracised and met with suspicion as somebody who has read a book or knows something about something other than betting or cricket. So just hit it into the sight screen, champ. It's really good doing podcasts in person with you guys because we can eyeball scarily.
Your body language at the moment with that elbow on you got your hand on your knee raised, elbow arching at a 90-degree angle. It's very intimidating.
Why'd you just champ me? I didn't even ask the question. But thanks to those who did ask the questions to give us the opportunity to alpha the fuck out of you. And we encourage those each and every week as we head into this podcast series, which we should say that there's going to be a couple of episodes next week, and then the week after that when the World Cup starts proper, three of these bad boys a week. So come along with a ride with us, and some more news coming up probably next week involving the UK, which I think we've teased enough to the point where it's fairly obvious what we're talking about. Ian Higgins here signing off with Sam Perry and Dave Edwards. We will see you next time on the Great Cricket Podcast.